Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my man, Josh Cohen, coming out of Ottawa.
How you doing this morning?
I'm all right, man. How you doing?
Doing all right.
It's kind of gloomy here in Toronto. It's Halloween day, and it's like just raining all day.
It's kind of sad. It's very spooky.
Sure. I feel bad for the kids, man. Did you ever trick-or-treat when it was raining or snowing out?
Yeah, that was not a fun time, especially in the snow. Like way back in the day when I was a kid and it snowed on, you know, during October, which doesn't really seem like it's doing it anymore because of global warming. But when it used to snow, like going out in that, it was painful.
Yeah, it's awful. Wait, didn't you just get snow like 2 days ago?
A little bit. It wasn't that much. But back when, it seemed like it snowed every single Halloween. No. Like it snowed hard too at night.
That's true. I do remember walking around when there was still snow on the ground. I was like, yo, I shouldn't be out here. Not in just like a hoodie.
Yeah, well, you gotta be a soldier and power through. Get that candy.
Truth. I'm gonna hit up Walmart and Shoppers Drug Mart tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Get it on discount.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Alright. So we're back. It's been, what, 2 weeks since the season started, and we've already got our first firing. Ty Lue, no longer the head coach of the Cavaliers. He was let go on Sunday morning, and I don't know, it's not that bad. He's still got 3 years left on his contract. He's going to be making $15 million going for the next 3 years.
Yeah, he's got a great setup. It would not surprise me if he totally just disregarded ownership's, you know, their call for him to play the younger players just so he would get fired and make $15 million in the next 3 years and just chill on the couch.
He sabotaged himself.
Why not? I mean, he knows he's going to get paid either way with his contract. It's a guaranteed contract, obviously, so if you're going to get, you know, every 2 weeks you see that amount of like hundreds of thousands of dollars coming in through your bank, I mean, why not? And plus, you don't have to coach a crappy team anymore.
That's true. But I don't know. I don't blame him fully. It sounds like there were conflicting reports coming out of what management actually wanted for the team. You know what I mean? I think most of being Jason Lloyd from The Athletic that reported it, that they wanted him to play all the young players. But at the same time, they were disappointed at how the team wasn't winning. So can you really win with young players is what everyone's getting at. Like, what kind of message are you trying to send through this guy who you inevitably fired?
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. You either play the young guys and you accept losing, or you try to win with your crappy veterans. And it just goes to show how good LeBron James still is. Even though I'm not a huge LeBron James fan, obviously, carrying that team to the finals with how they look right now, obviously, is it's a testament to how great he really is.
Yeah, I guess you can't really replace LeBron with Chetty Osmond either.
Well, let's not insult Chetty. He's had a pretty good year so far. The rest of the guys, however, not so much. But I think the story was, the mandate was that they didn't want Ty Lue to continue to play, you know, guys like J.R. Smith and George Hill, these big minutes, or, you know, 20 to 30 minutes a game. And Ty Lue was starting to play the younger players through games, I think 3, 4, and 5. And then he began playing JR and a few of the veterans 25 minutes in the last couple of games before he was fired. And then after that, they just said, all right, you're not going to listen to us. You're out of here.
It seems like so early to do it, though, right? I guess last year we had Phoenix firing. Who was their head coach last year? Earl Watson. Last year it was Phoenix, and now it's Cleveland. I mean, not the most stable of ownership teams here, but it's just strange to do it that early, too.
Yeah, it just shows that, you know, some teams, their ownership just is not in a good place. I mean, obviously, Cleveland and the Knicks are in the same situation where their owners just I don't know. They've been awful since they've really been the owners for those teams, and especially with Cleveland, they just have no direction right now. Now, obviously, Kevin Love is out for a month and a half, so things are only going to get worse for them. And you know, Colin Sexton's probably going to play a lot of minutes coming up, and Chetty Osmond as well. But again, they're going to be in the same situation as they were, and now with their coach, you know, I guess interim coach, not interim coach. We're not really sure what to call him at this point.
He's a representative at this point.
Yeah. Larry Drew is now the sort of interim coach, and he hasn't even accepted that label. Like right after the firing happened, Cleveland came out with a media posting saying that he was going to be the interim coach. And then they asked him about that. They asked Larry Drew about that in the media. And he said, nope, I am not the interim coach. They haven't made any commitment to me, and thus I will not be accepting this title. So there's definitely a disconnect there between ownership and Larry Drew now. And obviously Larry Drew wants some sort of commitment and a longer-term contract, because all these guys are on one-year deals this year.
Yes. Good play by Larry Drew.
Most definitely. And I've heard that he's actually one of the highest-paid assistant coaches in the NBA. He's getting paid like $1 million-plus a year. So he's in a position where he has all the power, because honestly with him, like, he doesn't care either. He's sort of like Ty Lue. He doesn't really care if he gets fired, because he's still getting paid $1 million plus a year. And he's going to find an assistant job somewhere else. So if they choose to go in a different direction, then he's cool.
Yeah.
Collect those paychecks.
Good for you, man. Good for you, Larry Drew. Also, we still have to remember that Damon Jones got fired with Ty Lue as well. So shame. They can finally bring back soup into the locker room.
Yes, yes. No more soup coming his way. No soup for you.
Nah. He can buy his own soup now.
Anyways, I hope some people listening to the podcast got that reference.
I hope all of them did. Anyways, the Cavaliers seem to be a wash at this point. It's Halloween night, and what? They've already gotten one win out of seven games? It's shaky. Kevin Love is out, as you mentioned. They're probably looking to trade all their veterans, Tristan Thompson, Korver, JR, George Hill. They're also like the most expensive players on the team at this point. So, I mean, if I were them, I would try to get rid of every one of them. And just, I guess, sort of build around Kevin Love for the future and Sexton. I don't see what else they can really do.
Obviously, with LeBron being there in the past, he was obviously a gift for them, but now he's a curse, because all these players that you mentioned got these massive contracts, especially with Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith, and they're not going to be able to move those guys, so they're stuck with them. And again, with the mandate coming down from ownership that they don't want these guys playing, they're just going to be on the books the next, I think, 2 years for both of those guys, and they're not going to be able to rebuild properly just having those contracts on the books. And another small story that came out yesterday was, you know, with the mandate from ownership, with all these players, you know, getting less minutes, J.R. Smith specifically told people around him that he was going to take some time off from the team. Whoa, and not what? Show up. Yeah.
I didn't hear that about this.
That was a thing yesterday. And, you know, he said that he was still going to, after, you know, thinking about it for a little while, he still said he's going to show up, obviously. But this may become a story in the next couple weeks if he continues not to get any minutes.
Oh my god, that caught me off guard. I don't know how to react to this. JR, how can you pull a Derrick Rose?
They're probably going to pull one of those, you know, JR is out for personal reasons, and then they might eventually suspend him if he's out for a while, but so far it hasn't come to fruition, but it was out there the last couple of days that he's thinking about doing that.
We're going to see a lot of Henny-related flu-like symptoms from JR coming out.
Yeah. And I think 2 games ago, he went 0 for 7 from the field, so
Jesus.
It's not like he's deserving of these minutes either.
I don't know. I would still rather have him than Jordan Clarkson play.
Yeah, I mean, for watchability's sake, for sure.
Even just for the team, man. Come on, it's Jordan Clarkson.
Well, I think we should move on to somebody who's actually getting buckets.
Ooh, good transition. I like that. We're going to move on to, I guess they were in Chicago, but Klay Thompson went absolutely crazy on that team. Dropped 10 threes by the half. We all knew he was going to break the record, and obviously he did. 14 threes in a game. That was just insane. Like, that is a straight-up shooting clinic. Not a scrimmage, not practice, just a clinic.
Yeah, I mean, going back, I think it was 10 years ago, When Donyell Marshall put up 12 threes on the Philadelphia 76ers, I didn't think that that record would be broken for a while. And now it seems like it's being broken all the time with, you know, Steph obviously had a couple games. I think where he had 13 threes and a few other players had 13, I believe, as well.
Was it just Steph?
I thought it was somebody else that had that too. Maybe it was somebody had 12.
He had Steph, Kobe, and Donyell had 12. Steph had 11, 12, 13 in like consecutive years. And then. Yeah. Obviously, this year is Clay. Insane.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that, you know, Zach LaVine is obviously the worst defensive player in the NBA.
How about some coaching? How about you throw another player at the guy?
Well, I mean, some different guys took turns on Clay. I mean, Justin Holiday got his, too. And there's a couple switches where Jabari didn't get out on Clay as well, so everyone got their turn, but obviously Zach started on him, and obviously he wasn't up to the task.
But do you expect Jabari to stop Clay? You don't, right?
But I don't expect Jabari to stop you.
True. Thanks, I guess. But, yeah, come on, man. Hoiberg's got to throw another defender out there. I don't mean like another single defender, I mean double. Triple him. Who cares? He can't handle the rock that well. Pressure him and see if he, like, turns it over.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, despite Clay getting 51 points, I think KD still had, like, 30 in that game, and Steph had, like, 24, 8, and 5. Yeah. So, I mean, you can't really double Clay Thompson because he's not really one to handle the ball for all that often during possessions, right? He probably averages, like, 1 or 2 seconds of possession if he actually shoots the ball, so.
That's true. And you're right, he doesn't really dribble. I think it was Haberstroh that had that stat where in the first half, he only dribbled like 5 times within his 10 threes.
Yeah.
And one of them was for like a step back or a side step. One of them was going up the court. So that was like 3 dribbles and then he just pulled up. Like that was insane.
Yeah, I can see your point. Like going into the third quarter, you could see that obviously that all the Warriors were just zoned in on getting him the ball. So when they ran those little split cuts, and, you know, plays off the ball where he's coming around screens, they should have just made it like a mandate during halftime that no matter what, when he's coming off a screen, I don't care if you leave Draymond open on the cut, just send 2 guys out to him, face guard him, double team, whatever you have to do so he doesn't get the record. Or just do what Philadelphia was doing against Donyell and just foul him.
I guess that works.
Yeah.
I would rather have a Damian Jones dunk every time over Klay Thompson 3.
Yeah, exactly. So that way you're not known as being the team that he did that against. But, you know, props to the Chicago fans for giving him a standing ovation, though, when he left the game. I mean, when you see a performance like that, you should appreciate it, even if it is the opposing team.
Well, of course. And it's not like they're expecting a W.
No, no.
Come on. This is Chicago. They're not expecting to win this year. We already knew that they would have one of the worst defenses in the league, and they're showing it. So why not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime your team is coming to Chicago or they're coming to your town, you can expect one of your top players just to go absolutely bananas this year.
Who's it going to be for the Raptors when they come? Danny Green?
I'm going to go with... Actually, no, last year when Toronto played Chicago, DeLon Wright had a massive game against them.
Whoa, that was unexpected.
I think he had like 32 and 10 or something like that against Chicago, so... I'm going to go with him this year against Chicago.
Expecting the repeat.
Or CJ Miles is finally going to come out of his slump and have a big game.
Yo, if he's still on the team. He cannot defend anyone right now. Holy. Yeah. I was watching the game yesterday and who was it on Milwaukee that he was covering? Like some scrub. Tony Snell. Tony Snell was beating CJ Miles. And I was like, man, that's rough to have Tony Snell beating you.
Yeah, when Tony Snell's getting the basket on you, then you know something's wrong, because he hardly ever steps inside the three-point line.
Exactly. He was drawing fouls, he was beating them off the dribble, it was, CJ Miles, man, get some confidence back.
He's been a disappointment this year, but speaking about disappointments, we can get into the two teams that we're most disappointed in thus far, you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, where do we start? Do we start with Houston or with Washington? Because they're both way underperforming. Let's start with Washington. I think they're obviously the bigger headline. We saw last week John Wall and Bradley Beal both saying that guys on their team need to be less selfish and need to recognize shot distribution a bit more, which is absolutely insane. John Wall and Bradley Beal, man, y'all need to get it together. I just don't understand this team. They have like the worst chemistry in the league. It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, they're talking about offense, and their defense is the problem, really. Exactly. I mean, their offense isn't that bad. I mean, it's bad, but it's not awful. It's not like, well, actually, it is awful, but it's not as bad as their defense. Their defense is just like, I think they're a top, bottom five defense this year, and they just show no cohesion within the starting unit or off the bench at all. Going into the lineup data, their starting five has been okay this year. With John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, Markieff Morris, and Jan Mahinmi, since, you know, Dwight hasn't played as of yet because his butt hurts. There's a joke to be had there, too.
Oh, dear.
But when you start bringing, you know, the guys off the bench into the fold, just going into one of their most used lineups, where they have Mahinmi, Jeff Green, John Wall, Bradley Beal, and Otto Porter Jr., their offensive rating with that lineup in 24 minutes is 76.5, which would be obviously one of, I guess, the all-time worst lineup in basketball history if they played that. And then if you bring in, you know, just their bench itself with Jeff Green, Jason Smith, Austin Rivers, Thomas Satoransky, and Kelly Oubre Jr., they have the exact same offensive rating at 76.5, and they're giving up 110 points a game.
Oh, my God. So,
their bench has been abysmal this year, and their best lineup actually is their small ball lineup, which they've barely even played, with John Wall, Markieff Morris, Bradley Beal, Porter, and Oubre. They've had 118 offensive rating versus 98, so that lineup's been their best lineup, but they've only used it for 21 minutes this year. So maybe the solution is, if you're not able to stop anybody, just go small with Markieff Morris at center. And just put out your best offensive lineup where you actually have space to move around and, you know, guys to spread the ball and, you know, be able to get the offense flowing a little bit.
I guess it's kind of tough for them to put out the small ball lineup with the teams they played, though, right? Like, first they had Miami, Toronto, Portland, Golden State, Memphis, obviously, L.A. Like, those are big teams. So it's kind of hard to have Markieff Morris playing center against, like, Hassan Whiteside. Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah, but if you're giving up that many points regardless, why not try something to where at least you can try to keep up with them points-wise? It's not like they've had a bunch of games where teams have scored 130-plus points on them. So it's not like it's going to change anything by playing Markieff Morris at center, right?
That's true. You let the Clippers drop 136 on you. I don't know. It's tough. I don't know how you can put in Markieff Morris and legitimately think that you'll actually win the game at the five. You know what I mean? Like, because no, I think they're doing more than just trying to stay competitive in these games. Like, you have to try to win.
Yeah, but what they're trying right now is just not working, so why not try something out of the box, right? I mean, until Dwight gets back, Jan Mahimi's not a good player. So, and Jason Smith is a shell of his former self, which was a shell of his former self before.
Jason Smith is a corner shooter at this point.
Like, and even then, he's not even that good at doing that.
Really? Are his numbers that bad this year?
I mean, he just isn't that great. I mean, if he's not spotting up and taking a shot immediately, he's basically useless out there. He's not good on defense either, so.
Sounds like a generic white guy these days. Yeah, it's tough. And then when you're relying on Dwight Howard to come back as your savior? Jesus Christ, man.
This team already has chemistry issues, and then you're adding in, you know, the worst chemistry guy in the NBA from the past, you know, five or six seasons. All of his previous teammates on different teams will tell you that. Yeah. So,
I mean, I guess their starting schedule has been a little bit tougher than a lot of other teams. Like, within the first four games, they had Toronto, Portland, Golden State. And now they're on, I guess they just finished a five-game away streak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they've had a tough schedule for sure. But at the same time, you got to at least show that you're going to be competitive in these games. And obviously, with all the news coming out about you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal just calling out their teammates this early in the season. Normally, it happens like later on in the year, during like the dog days of, you know, February or March, where teams are sort of, you know, very tired throughout the course of the regular season, and also they're like not really exactly fighting for playoff position as of yet until April.
Yeah.
So, I think Washington will eventually turn it around a little bit. They'll probably still make the playoffs and be like a lower seeded team, obviously. Because they have too much talent not to, you would think. But my problem with them is something that I was worried about with Toronto if they didn't make the trade for Kawhi, in that you bring you know, be bringing back a team that has been together for so long that, and they've been essentially doing the same thing in the playoffs the past few seasons, to where you just think it's just become like a stale thing where guys are just tired of playing with each other because they know what's going to happen at the end of the year. It's an inevitable reality that they're going to get ousted in, you know, the first or second round. And why continue to play hard throughout the course of the regular season when you just know that you're going to be in Aruba by late April?
It's true. That's tough. I completely agree. Sometimes you just need a culture change for these guys. Like, if John Wall went like to another team, I think he would have a big resurgence of a year. And same thing with Beal. If he didn't have to play with John Wall, I think he would actually be much happier. You know what I mean? Like a guy who's not on, like constantly on his ass, and he could just shoot. It'd be perfect. I really want to know who they were calling out about taking too many shots. Because it has to be someone. I've been looking at the stats ever since, and it's either between Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre, or Austin Rivers. And Austin Rivers doesn't play enough. It has to be Oubre or Porter at this point. And if you're yelling at Otto Porter for taking too many shots, that is weird as hell, considering the guy is just a spot-up shooter.
I think Porter can do more things than spot-up shoot, but I think he sort of got that, you know, into his head where the media is always talking about his contract and how big it is and how he needs to be like the third star in the team and how he needs to step up and show more of an all-around game. I think he's a really good player. And I think, like you said, in a different team, I think he'd be amazing. Like, he could start for almost any NBA team, if not all of them, because of his switchability and, you know, being able to hit the threes and playing, you know, great positional defense against maybe four different positions. But on this team, he's just another guy because they don't really use him correctly. And, you know, although Scott Brooks' job is safe right now because he has, I think, 3 years left on his contract, same sort of situation as Ty Lue.
Yeah.
If this continues and they continue to lose a bunch of games and they don't make the Dwight thing work, he's scheduled to come back on Friday, then I think he might be next in line to be on the unemployment line.
That would be so strange and not surprising. I'm not sold on Otto Porter. I know he got that massive contract. He signed on for a long time and everyone seems to love him, but I think he's more of a guy who's going to shoot a high percentage in a small volume. He can't be a guy who shoots a lot.
But that's a winning player when he's on a winning team, right? You want a guy that knows his role and will only take good shots, and he's that perfect type of player to fit into that kind of system. But Washington's not that system right now because they have no structure.
So would you rather have him on a team like Milwaukee, for example?
Oh, he'd be amazing on that team.
Would you rather have Porter or Chris Middleton?
Oh, Chris Middleton for sure. Chris Middleton's he's a star now.
Yeah.
Even though he's not recognized as one, I mean, his stats say otherwise. So he's in a different category, I think. But I think Porter would fit in perfectly in that team. Like, he could be the type of player that could make a team like Milwaukee a team that could, you know, maybe be a second-round exit this year to a team that can make the conference finals at least.
Okay, Porter or Danny Green?
Porter, for sure. I mean, yeah. Danny Green's a better fit with Toronto, obviously, but in terms of, like, their overall game, Porter has more to his game, even though Danny Green's a better defensive player.
You think he has more to his game?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he can drive a little bit better, but that's about it.
No, he's got a nice pull-up game, and last year he actually showed, you know, a pretty good off-the-dribble game on the pick-and-rolls, but they haven't really used him at all on the pick-and-rolls this year because I think they have too many guys that need the ball now. I mean, with Austin Rivers on the team and Kelly Oubre trying to show that, you know, he's trying to get a second contract too, right?
Let's relax on the Austin hate. He plays like 15 to 20 minutes a game. Like, let's chill.
Well, that's just like a basketball mandated thing now where when you talk about Austin Rivers, you have to hate on him. So all of his teammates hated him in the Clippers. He played too many minutes there. He's a coach's son. And, you know, he's improved a lot over the course of the last couple of years. But, you know, it's just an ongoing joke.
Yo, he's a dog, man. I don't understand the hate. I also just don't like Chris Paul, so maybe that's why I don't like the hate.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a constant Chris Paul fest.
Yeah.
Man, speaking of Chris Paul, how awful is Houston? What is they're 1-5. They're 0-4 at home. Like, that's the most incredible part about all of this. James Harden hasn't played in 2 games. Chris Paul obviously misses 2 games because of suspension. But they are just awful right now.
Yeah, right now they're averaging, in terms of like their home games, They've dropped their four home games by an average of 17 points. And they've already trailed by 20-plus points, three times as many minutes as they did all of last season, which is crazy.
What the hell? That's crazy.
Yeah.
They just can't win. They lost against New Orleans, the Clippers, the Jazz, the Clippers again, and then the Trailblazers yesterday.
Yeah, and obviously they've had some issues with their star players not playing. Like, James Harden's been out the last two or three games. Chris Paul missed those two games with suspension. So, obviously, they haven't had their full lineup for most of those games. But the mellow factor might be real, to be honest. And going back to, the Rockets trailing by 20-plus points so far this year, they trailed by 20-plus points, 39 minutes in total this year, which is fourth most in the NBA thus far. So guess how many minutes they trailed for 20-plus points last season?
Three.
They trailed, well, it's not going to be that little.
I don't know, man.
They trailed by 20 or more, only 12 minutes in total last year, which is the fewest in the NBA.
Wow, that's incredible. So they've already gone way beyond that.
Yeah, 39 minutes. Yep, three times more. It's crazy.
Three or six games into the year. That's insane. They just, what is it? Their defense obviously isn't that good, but they just can't score right now. I mean, the game against Utah, they only had 89 points. Against Portland, they scored like the lowest ever since they had D'Antoni as their coach at 85. How are they not scoring?
I think it's just a combination of, again, them not having both guys available to them, and Chris Paul and James Harden. And then also, Eric Gordon's got off to a really, really slow start. So when he's not scoring, and you have to count on Melo as your second now, or a third guy, in terms of, scoring options, it's not a great situation, because as of right now, again, Melo does look washed so far.
That's just rude. That's
the truth. And I mean, when your three-point shooting's not going, then, the Chris Paul and, Clint Capella pick and roll, or James Harden, Clint Capella pick and roll is going to be, it's going to be tough for them to establish a situation where, like, one of those guys gets to the rim, because you have wing defenders that are laying off guys like James Ennis and Melo and cutting off that play. They just don't have as much space because they haven't been able to shoot thus far. And when you're playing Michael Carter Williams, like 10 to 15 minutes a game too, it's just disastrous. He started one game for them. And he passed up on a wide open three on one of the possessions. In the very next possession, he got the ball behind the three-point line, dribbled into traffic, and turned it over. And that's just like a microcosm of what Houston has looked like this year. Even against Portland yesterday, I think they've only scored like 50 points so far, like through, I think, 28 minutes or 30 minutes of that game. And you would never, ever see that last year.
That's like a quarter.
Yeah.
That's like a quarter and a half, realistically.
And despite all that, Chris Paul played like 36 minutes yesterday.
Is Chris Paul washed? I think he is.
He's washed. Get out of here.
If we're calling Melo washed, I think Chris Paul's washed too.
No, Chris Paul just came back from suspension. He's had two bad games.
Exactly. Relax. That means he should be fresh.
Nah, relax.
He should have the freshest legs on the team.
He's an old guy now. He needs time to, get in the rhythm of the game. Chris Paul's fine. They'll be fine. Like, this is a team I'm still buying stock on. They'll be fine.
I don't know, man. He had two games off, and what, he's playing mid-30 minutes now? Mid to high 30s? Shot 6 of 19 from the field yesterday. That sounds like a wash to me, my friend.
Everyone has their bad games. He'll be fine, but... Going back to the Michael Carter-Williams situation, that's like the one signing throughout the entire course of the offseason. I was just like, Houston is the highest three-point shooting team in history, and you're signing a guy that can't shoot at all to be your backup point guard. That just made no sense to me. I mean, I get it for like defensive versatility, but even then, he's not a good defensive player.
Yeah.
I mean, he should be a good defensive player, but he's not.
They should have traded for Austin Rivers.
Yeah, I mean, honestly.
It would have actually helped, oddly enough. But then he would have had to play with Chris Paul, and nobody wants to play with Chris Paul. I really wonder, does this Carmelo Anthony Chris Paul relationship affect anything?
I'm not sure Melo plays well at all, period, at this point, no matter who he's playing with.
Yeah, he can't. Yeah, he is. I hate to say it, but he's well past his prime. He's pretty washed.
This is the one team where you would think that he'd thrive on, because he's playing with two guys who are good friends of his, who he's played with, you know, in the summer times, obviously. So he has good chemistry and he knows how they play and knows what spots they like to get to. And his primary job is just to stand behind the 3-point line and shoot, which historically he's been really good at. But yet he hasn't really been able to knock down shots this year so far. And obviously defensively, he's probably the worst big man coverage. In terms of big man coverage, he's probably the worst in the NBA in terms of pick and roll coverage. So when guards go straight at him, he just can't guard anybody.
So where do we think this team ends up? Say, like, for playoff standings, still top three like we had originally estimated? Because it's kind of hard to get to a top three spot after you start 1-5.
Yeah, I mean, in the Western Conference, it's really tough to get back up to the 2 or 3 slot, like you said, when you're losing this many games early in the season. But at the same time, like, once James Harden gets healthy, I think they'll be able to right the ship. And they may not be the 2 seed. Like, before the season, I predicted that Utah is going to be the 2 seed, which I still like right now. But I think Houston's still going to be a home court advantage team. I mean, they'll figure it out. And worst case scenario, Melo's on a 1-year minimum contract with them, I believe, right? So if he continues to play this way, I can see them either benching him or just cutting him, which would be really sad to see a player of his caliber getting cut. But with his contract as is, they can definitely do so if he continues to play poorly, and they can find somebody else who fits better that may not be as, you know, as highly regarded throughout the NBA as a guy that can score the ball like he could. But if he's not able to do so, then you might be better off just giving his minutes to somebody else.
I think one of the main issues with this team is that they're not very deep either. As we can see when James Harden or Chris Paul had to sit out their games, like, there's no real bench. You put Melo into the starting lineup, James Ennis right now is hurt, and even then, James Ennis wasn't really contributing when he was healthy. And then Gerald Green is playing 26 minutes a game.
Yeah, I think Eric Gordon really getting off to a slow start is the thing that's hurt them the most, besides the injuries and the suspension, because he's supposed to be their third scoring option. And he just hasn't produced at all so far. And he's shot a terrible percentage. He just doesn't look right so far. Maybe he has an injury issue, but that hasn't been reported yet. Maybe he's just off to a slow start because he just came into camp out of shape. I'm not sure, but he just hasn't played well so far.
Yeah, he looks really slow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm done with these downers. Come on, Houston. Get it together. That's all I can really say. Just get it together. Get healthy, please. I want to go somewhere that's oddly happy. I want to ship it out to Memphis, to FedEx Center. Because the Memphis Grizzlies are doing what no one expected them to. Well, I guess some expected it. But they're playing pretty well. Like 3-3, 4-2.
They're 4-2.
Wow. Mike Conley is back, finally healthy. Marc Gasol is actually playing again and engaged. And Garrett Temple is shooting lights out. This team is just so unexpected.
At the same time, though, I think they're the opposite of Houston, where they've gotten off to a quick start because their schedule has allowed them to. I mean, they've lost. They lost to Indiana in the first game of the year, and then they played Atlanta at Sacramento, where they lost against Phoenix, Washington, and their big win this year so far was at Utah, which is a huge surprise, but that game was a slog. Nobody could score, which is the kind of game that Memphis wants to play, obviously. They've gotten off to a good start to where they've beaten the teams they're supposed to, which is what playoff teams are supposed to do, right?
Perfect.
But at the same time, their schedule coming up is going to show whether they are the team that is going to be able to make the playoffs or not, because they're playing at Utah, at Phoenix, which is probably going to be a win for them, but at Golden State versus Denver, Philadelphia, Utah, Milwaukee. So that's a murderer's row right there, where they just have one easy game in a span of 7 games. So if they're able to come out with that stretch with 3 out of the 7 games where they come out with a W, then that'll be very impressive. But I expect their hot start to subside now.
I mean, if Garrett Temple continues to shoot 51.6% from 3, they have a pretty good chance of beating these teams.
Yeah, for sure. But I think when they start playing the better teams like they will in this upcoming stretch, I think we're going to see their true colors in that. I don't think they're a playoff team.
So you think they fall off that hard, eh?
Yeah. Playing the 7 teams they're about to play? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that is a pretty tough slate aside from basically just Phoenix. every other team is a legitimate playoff team, especially playing in Utah. I mean, they've already won that one game in Utah already this year, but to win it back-to-back against Utah, it's a team that has like a top three defense at this point. It's going to be really tough. Obviously, Golden State as well, but I'm impressed. Conley's actually playing healthy. He actually looks spry. After years of, what were his, like, he had that groin injury and an Achilles?
Yeah, he's had an Achilles injury the last 2 years.
Yeah. After the Achilles injuries, I was expecting him to come out a little bit slower, but he's come out, like, gunning. And he's running the floor a lot.
Yeah. And honestly, Memphis is one of those teams where they haven't really done what everyone else has. They're like a different kind of team where they've really slowed down the pace and they're trying to play, you know, more big ball instead of, you know, trying to play small ball and pick up the pace and, you know, keep the possession game up and try to play a more, you know, variance-oriented game. They just keep doing what they're doing, sort of like back in the Zeebo days.
Oh, great grind, baby.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of guys off the bench, and where, you know, if their starting lineup isn't playing that well, they can bring in guys that can, you know, put up points, and like Wayne Seldon, Marshawn Brooks, guys like that, where they can come in and have a game where you don't really expect it.
Marshawn Brooks.
He's had a couple breakout games so far this year. I mean, he's fun to watch. It's just too bad his career sort of went off a hill like 2 years ago, but he's back in the NBA now, and he's putting up buckets, so.
True. Go get him, man. Go get him. All right, let's go to Sacramento, because I personally have not watched a single Sacramento game this year. I watched one Memphis game, so give me at least that. But how is Sacramento winning?
With the fact that they've had, you know, a top 10 lottery pick the last 10 years, I think that's finally coming to fruition, to where these guys are finally, I don't know, they're sort of realizing their potential. I mean, De'Aaron Fox has played really well this year so far. And Buddy Hield has actually played pretty well as well. He's shooting the ball really well, and he's looking like a potential starting shooting guard now. So you combine those two guys with Willie Cauley-Stein, who's actually broken out this year. He's been, you know, a monster on the boards. He's finishing plays inside. Their team just has good overall chemistry, and they play really hard. And they've been in every game this year besides the one game where they lost to New Orleans where they gave up 149 points, but let's not talk about that.
Yeah, let's negate that.
But they've won four games in a row, and they've won two games in a row in the row, which is probably the first time they've done that in 10 years. But
they're 5-3.
Yeah.
Like, no one could have predicted this. No one saw this coming so far.
And one of the most underrated moves that's happened so far in the offseason was Nemanja Bjelica going to Sacramento and getting out of his contract in Philadelphia. And that's been, you know, that's been something where, like, if he actually signed in Philadelphia, they might have more than four wins right now, because he's been a huge player for Sacramento thus far, just doing a bit of everything.
Yeah, he's been really good. They're basically starting him at the four, right? Playing Cauley-Stein at the five. And then running a lot of the offense through Bjelica. At least a half-court offense, which is probably a great idea. He's a pretty good passing big man.
And he's just been a reliable spacer, too. Like, Sacramento hasn't had a reliable shooter, especially from the big man spots, in a very long time. And he just has a good overall game. Yeah, pretty much.
I haven't seen anyone shooting in Sacramento since Chris Webber. Maybe DeMarcus, I guess, towards the later years. But that's about it.
Yeah, and now they actually have a consistent rotation, too, where they know which guys are going to play. And even guys like, I mean, they signed Yogi Ferrell in the offseason, and he's had games where he's been a DNP CD. And, you know, Ben McLemore as well, he's a guy that was expected to get minutes. But instead of, like, giving minutes to 11 different guys where you're just trying to develop players, and even a guy like Scalabissier, they've gone with a consistent 8-9-man rotation. And so far, with the guys knowing they're going to get minutes, it's worked so far. And the guys have, again, played hard, and they've played together. And they're just finding ways to win games, which is not something you expect out of a Sacramento team, especially.
Yeah, they're grinding a lot of these out. I'm glad that they finally stopped playing Ben McLemore and Scal. Like each of them are averaging 5 minutes or less. It's time to give up on these some guys, right? And De'Aaron Fox has taken a big step that we were not expecting. He's controlling the game a lot more. He's playing really good defense. And he just knows how to control the pace. he's being like a legitimate floor general, which for a second year player is very impressive.
Yeah, and his shooting has really improved as well. His 3-point shooting is up this year, obviously. And as you said, he's like a better game manager overall.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Do you think this team actually squeezes into the playoffs, though?
No. Not a chance.
That's a shame. At least they'll put in some fun games.
Yeah, I mean, if they continue to stay competitive in these games and their players, their younger players develop, and they're able to hopefully get Harry Giles in minutes too. He's a guy that hasn't played too much this year, but so far Marvin Bagley's played the majority of the minutes at the backup 4 and 5. So if they're able to get those guys quality minutes and, you know, they end up winning 30 to 35 games, and I think their over-under was like 26.5 or so. I mean, that's a step in the right direction at least.
Oh, yeah. At this rate, they're going to blow that out of the park.
For sure.
Also, shouts to Iman Shumpert for blowing up OKC's defense in that one game where he had like 24 points. Haven't seen Iman Shumpert being mentioned in a long time, but it was nice to see him actually playing like a young him and not, you know, a washed shell.
Yeah, and he's been a key contributor as a starter for a lot of the games. It's been, you know, him and Justin Jackson starting at the three. And he's played pretty well, surprisingly.
Shooting 48% from the three. Good man.
He's there, Garrett Temple.
Wow. All right, so let's move on. We've been getting a lot of good feedback, so we're going to start a new segment called Stats Corner, where Josh just shoots trivia at me, and we'll see what kind of NBA knowledge is actually there.
Yeah, well, last week you failed miserably, so let's see if you can improve on your standing this week.
I was 50% last week, all right.
All right, so the first thing we're going to go to is point differential. So this week, as of today, October 31st, Halloween, we're going to look at the positive point differential for teams. So as of right now, who do you think has the top 5 point differential throughout the 30 teams in the NBA so far this year? Who are the top 5 teams in point differential?
Well, I'm going to assume Golden State because they just blew up Chicago.
Yes, they're at 13.5 so far this year, beating teams by an average of 13.5.
Jeez. Give me Milwaukee.
They're first, actually, at 15.5.
Seriously?
Yes.
Whoa. That crushing defeat of Toronto must have helped a lot then.
Yes.
Wow. Toronto.
Toronto is fourth at 8.4.
All right. Who else is good? Denver.
Denver is third at 8.5.
Ooh, so I just have the fifth team left.
If you get the fifth team, I'll be very impressed.
Is it Boston? No.
No, Boston is at 4.9.
Is it Sacramento?
No, it's not Sacramento. It's definitely not. Sacramento actually has a negative point differential despite being 5-3.
That's weird.
They're at minus 0.2, by the way.
New Orleans?
New Orleans only has a 3.7 point differential. So yeah, despite being 4-2, they haven't won games by too much so far on average.
Even after their blowout against Houston, eh? That's crazy.
It's a team that's really gone under the radar based on their record so far. Nobody's really talked about them at all because of what happened to them in the playoffs last year. So there's your hint.
Ah, Portland.
Indeed. Portland's at a plus 7.9 thus far this year.
How?
They've been winning games by a lot of points. Wow. I don't know.
Their game has been going off, but damn. I didn't know
their bench has been surprisingly good this year. That's why I think Zach Collins has really stepped up this year so far. Nick Stauskas has been a huge game changer for them, surprisingly.
Okay, relax, Sauce. No one wants to see Sauce Castillo, but shouts to Zach Collins, man. Favorite of the pod for sure. I love
Absolutely.
That guy.
Absolutely. So now we're going to go to a different stat. We're going to go to, let's go to offensive rating, and we'll go to the worst team so far in the NBA. So we'll go bottom 5 offensive rating. So yes, Houston is one of them. They're 26 so far this year at 103.8.
Oh my God, that is low as hell.
Yes. Per 100 possessions, by the way.
Of course.
Yes.
Memphis?
No, actually. Memphis currently is, they are 23rd, so they're almost there, but not quite.
Washington.
Washington is actually 24th, so you're getting closer.
Damn. Give me Indy?
No. Indiana has been surprisingly good this year. They're 8th.
Wow.
Try to think of the worst teams in the NBA right now.
Phoenix?
Phoenix is 25th, so they're just outside the bottom five.
Damn. Who the hell is worse than Phoenix? Cleveland?
No, surprisingly. Cleveland's been actually in the middle of the pack. They're 16th.
My God, I'm awful at this one. Jeez. Orlando?
Yes, Orlando is the worst offensive team in the NBA right now at 99.4 per 100 possessions. Welcome so, to. Going into the season, who did everyone think was going to be the worst team in the NBA?
Oh, the ATL.
Yes, they are second worst. And now you have two teams that are supposed to be better teams in their conference. At least a top four seed in their conference.
Wow.
That have struggled to start out the year.
And it's not Houston?
No. Houston is just outside the bottom five at 26th.
Oh.
25th, sorry.
OKC.
Yes. OKC currently sitting at 2 wins and 4 losses at 102 points per 100 possessions. And then who is the other team that has been great defensively but has struggled offensively that everyone thought was going to be obviously an amazing team overall?
Great defensively?
Yes.
What? Who is actually good defensively in this league? Ooh. You like what I did there?
Very nice. Very nice.
Boston?
Correct. Boston is the third worst.
Really?
Of offense so far this season.
It's because Kyrie's got to play better. Finally cut his hair.
Maybe finally cut his hair. He went for 29 yesterday, so maybe the tides have finally turned.
Jeez. Really got to start running everything through Tatum.
Yeah, indeed.
Let your all-star one-on-one point guard play some one-on-one ball for once. Jeez. Come on.
Yeah, they just have to get their chemistry together with those five guys in starting lineup, which may not happen with Gordon Hayward looking like a shell of his form himself so far, but hopefully he gets to that level again.
Yeah, I don't know how people thought Hayward would come out like killing it this year. The guy came back from a broken leg or broken ankle, for sure. Whatever.
And you know, it's gonna take him probably until January or February to get back into what he can do. So
exactly.
So I have one more thing for you. I found an interesting stat in terms of points saved for not only teams but for players. So this is basically the stat for rim protection. So who do you think has protected the rim best in terms of defending points in the paint or shots in the paint so far this season? Who are the top five teams?
Oh, teams.
I'll give you five guesses.
Utah?
Utah is actually not in the top five. Oh, they've actually had a negative differential so far.
In the paint?
In terms of points saved, yep.
With Gobert?
Yeah, surprisingly.
Reigning DPOY? Wow. You mean Boston?
Boston has a positive differential, but they are not in the top five.
Dang. So who else has a lot of big guys?
It's not so much big guys. It's more so teams that sort of force teams to take shots in the paint where they're sort of like, they're guarding the paint, essentially, right? They're just bringing a bunch of guys to the paint and not as much guarding the three-point line, which can be a problem. The top team, in terms of protecting the paint, has done both. But the other teams that are listed here, they're more so trying to protect the paint versus guard the three-point line, which has caused them problems.
Milwaukee?
Milwaukee is fourth in this category. So they've done a bit of both, obviously, and they've been good on the three-point line as well. The other three teams, not so much.
Wow.
And the top team, obviously, has done both, so that one you still have to get.
Denver?
No. Who has been the other team that has been super active that you've watched so far?
That I watch?
Yes. On a consistent basis.
I don't know, man.
Toronto? Yep.
Really? Huh. I guess it makes sense with lengthy defenders too, right?
Yeah, their wingers are able to not only get into the paint and stop these guys from taking easy shots and floaters, but they're able to close out on the three-point line and make guys, you know, take a dribble or two and step in for a mid-range shot. So they're pretty good in that regard.
Is New Orleans in this list?
They are not. I'll give you the three teams. You're probably not going to get them.
No, man, this is a hard one.
Brooklyn's at number two in defending shots in the paint. And on that point, Jared Allen's been very good at that so far. And surprisingly, Washington's been very good at that as well. But again, they have not been able to guard the perimeter at all.
So yeah, this is the weirdest stat you've ever brought up. This is basically saying who has the worst perimeter defense. Yes. With like a decent big man. Except Washington doesn't have a decent big man, so I don't understand what this means.
Yeah. I don't know. They're just making teams take more contested shots in the paint, but again, they're bringing so many guys in the paint that they're giving up way too many shots from the corners and obviously good 3-point shots from the top of the key. The other team is Atlanta, which again you would not expect, but they have Deadman and Alex Len, and their perimeter defense is obviously terrible. So, surprisingly, they're there as well.
I call BS on your whole stat here. This is like the worst stat you've ever brought me. Like, what the hell? Who has the worst perimeter defense and has to rely on a mediocre big man? Not even a good big man. Or, on the other hand, who has a horrible perimeter defense whose guards don't actually defend and just lay off? Which causes
they just all lay into the paint, and teams are not shooting as well from the 5 to 10 foot range against them. And so
bring me better numbers next week, because this is ridiculous. This is absolutely awful.
So we'll go to the players now. Centers. This one will be more manageable in terms of expectations. So who is the best rim protectors at the center position thus far in the NBA this year?
Oh, give me Whiteside.
Whiteside, no, he is not on this list.
What? How are we calculating this? Just blocks?
It's not blocks. It's more so in terms of defending shots at the rim. It's not exactly blocks. It's more so defending shots that miss.
Giannis?
What did you just say?
Giannis?
Oh, I think you said Jonas.
Jonas, okay.
No, we're talking about centers. Just centers.
Jonas Jerebko?
Just centers.
Drummond.
Drummond is at a negative differential, so he has not defended the rim that well at all, Surge. Actually. Yes, Surge is actually third.
Surge having a stellar year for a 29-year-old.
He's been surprisingly good this year. No, on offense, he's been a bit shaky, but defensively, he's been very good.
It's amazing what you can do playing center and not four.
Yes.
Silliness. Thanks, Dwayne Casey. Who else do we have? Horford?
Horford is not on this list. Actually, no, sorry. Horford's at a +9 differential, yeah, so he's seventh.
That's right. Bring out Horford into the list. Give me Gobert.
Surprisingly, Gobert has been one of the worst.
Oh my god. So,
that's probably just, an aberration, obviously, but so far teams have shot pretty well against him in the paint.
That makes no sense.
His counterpart, though, Derek Favors, is actually at a plus differential. He's actually fifth on the list.
Whoa. Gasol.
Somebody who changed teams in the offseason.
DeMarcus Cousins.
Off the bench, huh?
Yeah. Who's changed teams?
He was going to go to this team and then he backed out.
Nemanja?
He's not a center.
Oh, DJ.
Yes, DJ's second. DJ. And then going back to Brooklyn being one of the better teams that have defended the rim, Jared Allen's actually first.
Can we just recognize that DJ is an incredible free throw shooter this year?
I know, he's at 84% thus far this year, which is crazy.
And not on limited amounts, but he's actually going consistently. And he looks smooth out there.
Yeah.
This is so shocking. Shouts to DJ. Sorry, who was the last one you mentioned? Oh, Jared Allen.
Jared Allen's the best so far. I think he's blocked more than 2 shots a game as well, so he's done really well.
I'm never going to remember the Nets for anything.
No. And then surprisingly, Alex Len is on the list too, but that's probably an aberration because he's just not good.
No, man. Yo, come at me with better numbers, man.
We'll come at you with the guards. The guards actually make sense so far this season. Yeah. So
you just brought me 2 stats that said Brooklyn and Atlanta have good defenders on their team.
No. I'm telling you that they've been good in terms of protecting shots in the paint. But again, that only means that they've done well protecting the shots in the paint, not so much on the perimeter, which is where they've been getting killed. Same with Washington.
We have poor defenders who just congest the paint, is all I've heard.
Well, just goes to show you what different teams go with different game plans, obviously, and so far those teams' game plans have not worked. They should try to defend the 3-point line better.
Yeah, shouts to old Toronto, because that's what they used to do, too.
And on that note, with regards to the guards that defended the paint the best, who do you think has done so far?
Wait, sorry. Guards who defended the paint?
Yes, guards who defended shots at the rim the best so far this year.
Oh, Lowry.
And it's from a team that you've seen.
Lowry.
A lot.
Charlie King.
Lowry is fifth so far, but okay. Who is better than him that's on his team that plays next to him?
Oh, Danny Green.
Danny Green is number one so far.
Green Ranger. Wow.
And on that note, for team or for players that have been struggling so far, Klay Thompson has been the worst defensive guard at protecting the rim so far in the NBA, which means that he's been allowing a lot of low buys so far. So not only has he been struggling offensively until that game against Chicago, but defensively, he's been one of the worst defensive players on the wing or on the perimeter in the NBA.
Klay Thompson on that China hangover, man.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. So that's all I got for this week in terms of stats.
Very good. Next week, come back with better ones, because your weird perimeter stats are not going to fly here, my friend.
I'll find something better next week.
And on that note, I think that's all the time we have for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Hit us up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, rate and review, all that kind of jazz. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. And until next time, peace.